You are now listening to Changing the Conversation with Punch TV Studios CEO Joseph Collins. Listen live as we discuss the Punch TV Studios IPO 2.0, funding for your film, acting in film and television, new affiliate stations, and all things Punch TV Studios. Meet the stars of your favorite Punch TV Studios film and television shows and find out how you can be a part of the company that is revolutionizing media. Call 657-383-1974 and join in on the conversation. And now your host, Punch TV Studios CEO Joseph Collins.
Are you an actor looking for your next role? Are you looking to audition to be cast in the next Hollywood project? One amazing way to do this is to work with Punch TV Studios, making movies and making magic. Join the actors group at Nabuki.com to find out about upcoming film projects and opportunities. It's a great place to network. Do you, Nabuki? As a filmmaker, you're brimming with ideas. But do you need help bringing your ideas to life? That's where Punch TV Studios comes in. We offer independent filmmakers a place to call home, as well as practical help, advice, resources, support, and most importantly, funding. Join the filmmakers group at Nabuki.com and network with industry professionals. Do you, Nabuki?
CEO Joseph Collins and Punch TV Studios have been broadcasting for the last 8 years, and for the last 2 years, Punch TV Studios has been producing TV shows and movies for license to major studios and TV networks all over the world. You can purchase your IPO stocks today for only $1 per share as they near their fourth quarter deadline. You could be a part of history as Punch TV Studios vies to be the first African-American owned company on the New York Stock Exchange. Join the Punch TV movement and be part owner for only $1 per share. That's $1 per share. Don't delay, because there is a limited amount of stock for a limited amount of time. So call them today at 310-419-5914. 310-419-5914. That's 310-419-5914. For more information, you can visit them online at punchtvstudios.com. That's punchtvstudios.com.
Are you an actor looking for your next role? Are you looking to audition to be cast in the next Hollywood project? One amazing way to do this is to work with Punch TV Studios, making movies and making magic. Join the actors group at Nabuki.com to find out about upcoming film projects and opportunities. It's a great place to network. Do you, Nabuki?
Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining us on another episode of Changing the Conversation with Punch TV Studios CEO, Mr. Joseph Collins, and I am your co-host, Sharifa Hardy, and like always, today we're going to have an amazing show. This week we've done the show Changing the Conversation a little bit different because we've been more topic-oriented. We've actually had some great discussions on Hollywood, breaking into Hollywood, the movie Girls Trip. Is it Hollywood's responsibility to portray black women, women, sex in a certain way? Or is it just, you know, entertainment? Is it television? But today, TGIF, we are in the Punch Bowl, and we have an amazing guest that's going to be joining us. We're going to get Mr. Collins to pop in this week. Hopefully we can get him in on this show today, but there's so much going on at Punch TV Studios, you would just be blown away at everything that we're doing. We're launching in Los Angeles in Southern California on Tuesday, August 1st. We are on KILM, so when you wake up Tuesday morning, get up extra early because you're going to need time to watch television. You're going to turn on Punch TV and see all of our amazing shows. We've been promoting, we've been posting some of our new trailers for some of the most amazing shows that you're going to see over the next month. We're going to roll out so many new shows, so you definitely want to tune in to KILM here in Long Beach Frontier. It's Channel 20 on every cable station from Direct to Dish to Spectrum. We are going to be on KILM. It's Channel 64 in some cities, but we are going to be covering from the desert to the sea, placing Punch TV in over 16 million more homes. So we definitely want you to be a part of what we're doing here at Punch TV Studios. We don't want you to just sit back and watch television. We want you to be a part owner of the company that is revolutionizing media, Punch TV Studios. You can visit our website at punchtvstudios.com, and you'll be able to make your investment at $1 per share. It's Friday. I don't know what's going to happen in the Punch Bowl. Every day is something unusual, something unique. But on Fridays, for some reason, it tends to get unusually interesting. So if you are listening to this show on the line and you want to make your voice heard, please press 1. If you are listening to this show on your computer and you want to make your voice heard, give us a call, 657-383-1974. Again, that number is 657-383-1974. So right now, joining us in the Punch Bowl, we haven't even brought on guests this week. We're doing some discussing, but we have a special guest in the Punch Bowl this morning. Good morning. Are you with us? Are you going to give us a little bit of your poetry?
Oh, yes, for sure.
That was me.
Let me
know. Give you the proper introduction.
It's okay. It's all right. It's all good. But you want me to do a little intro right quick?
Do a little intro for us.
All right, cool. Well, I'm a poet. My name is False Reality. I'm a poet from New York City. Right now I'm out in L.A. just chilling, you know, just meeting other people, hitting up shows, doing shows, and really just continuing on this journey of life. But anyway, I'm going to do a poem real quick. Here it is. I am a homegrown homeless heroine with bars nothing similar to unsober thoughts. I write poems about hard bottoms and black feet while burning caution signs like incense to embrace my fears. I'm roaming the streets like I just moved in. I'm living out of the front room of my back. I'm looking for good green and yellow lights. I am afraid of stopping. I am human. Setbacks holding me up like nooses, keeping me down like pay cuts. And I want to be secure like an anchor. I'm obviously stained like dingy dungarees. Reality eventually takes emotion's face and reminds me the tears running will keep me in my place of being humble while I mumble. See, the mold to make me lighter was heavy. The only thing gaining on me was that weight on my shoulders. I knew that I would get over, cause where I've been was sweating me like top lips, hovering over every word that I'd spit, trying to cut me off like I'm not in my lane, leaving witnesses lacking what's informative, like incomplete sentences that I'm not checking for. I am wide-eyed, waiting for the present, the only gift that'll bring the peace I need, the air I breathe. I wrote this to get me off my hinges, to set me free. I am less of a dove and more so fly like a pigeon, trying to make sense of see-through ceilings, preferring clipped wings so I could just walk away from unfair dealings. Hurt but still armed, I am a new, I am Anu, still filled with my grandmother. Her last name's Nesbitt, first name's Grace. I am a mustard seed that don't have to muster up faith. I am privacy that don't have to look for a place. I am here, praying for the masses while running in small circles, filling up shot glasses with good ideas before the cheers, keeping both eyes open because Murphy's Law will paint you purple, sending you through obstacles disguised as crisis. But don't pick a crime before you pick your vices. It's nigger thoughts picking our brains like cotton fields got us like this. Thank you.
Wow, that was beautiful. That was That was deep. I'm listening, and I'm like, okay, I got all these questions coming to mind. But we're going to start with the first one. I know.
All right.
And, you know, sometimes on my show I got to let my psychic telekinesis come through because sometimes I just know. But I know that that something happened, that there was some motivation behind that poem. That's not one of those life is going along, swimming along, every day is normal, and I'm going to write this poem. What was the motivation?
Yeah. Well, for me, the motivation through that whole piece was just finding myself. You know, I was blessed to get to somewhat be reconnected with my birth mother, and when I did, she had already passed. So what I did, I was watching a show, a documentary that she was in. It was on the Showtime Network on cable, and pretty much the woman who did the documentary, she was she's a doctor, and she was pretty much trying to let the world know that that AIDS is affecting women of color in two places in the world the most. And one place is East Africa, and the other place is the South Bronx. So she got women from both of those areas and interviewed them and their life and all of that. And my mother was one of them. And just watching her, I really just pretty much saw a reflection of myself. And it just helped me understand more that, what anybody's going through, that, nothing happens by accident. Sometimes, life gives us the chance to really figure out the missing pieces to help us understand the bigger picture, that's really the motivation for that poem, was just recognizing that, nothing goes in vain. Everything is a part of a plan. Whoever people pray to, it doesn't matter. It's like, it's all a part of a order that has to happen. And just like me seeing that, my birth mother, whatever, we all have those kinds of moments where it's like, you never heard people say, some things, like, just let you know that you're in the right place at the right time. And I feel like that was just one of those moments for me, and that's just pretty much where that poem came from.
So meeting your birth mother was one of those moments for you.
Well, she had already passed, but pretty much, I guess, meeting her through that show or that documentary, yeah.
Okay. So before you saw the documentary, did you know your mother was a part of the documentary?
No, I did not. Thank you.
Okay, so you're just watching the show, and all of a sudden you see your birth mother.
No, well, what happened was I was reconnected with my biological siblings, my sister. I was actually looking for her. We got separated when I was 10 and she was 8, and we found each other. And it's crazy how it happened. A friend of mine had saw a picture of her, and she was just saying that, that's your sister. You don't really talk about her anymore. I said, you know what? I'm at peace now. Wherever she is, God bless her. And I know she's probably thinking about me the way I'm thinking of her or whatever. Then they just went online, and, I've been looking. But they just went online that day on Facebook, and they just found her, And then we called her, and then she told me our birth brother had found her a week before, and then it was just crazy, and then he was the one who had the footage, and then he shared it with me, and that's when it all happened. It was just a really, really crazy time, but it was a blessing.
No, it sounds like it. One of the things that we do here, and the main reason why Punch TV Studios was started, was to make movies and to make shows from the lives of ordinary people. The show, changing the conversation, aside from the fact that I'm just plain nosy, I get to find out more of the details in the background, because there's always a story, and everything that happens. I'm like, okay, that poem was beautiful. I loved it. But what was the story? What was the motivation that got you to that moment? Because, I talked to actors, I talk to entertainers, hosts, comics, and they usually always say there's that moment where all of a sudden they see things different, and in that moment is when the creativity, when the genius is actually born. And I could see that kind of passion when you were reciting your poetry. It's like you're reliving, this story, but it's your life.
That's for reliving the epiphany every time. Exactly. That's a fact.
Now, I just want to ask you from just your personal opinions, we're going to go off topic a little bit, but since you mentioned it with AIDS and everything that happened, one of the things that we were discussing on Monday's show, which kind of moved us into discussing whatever is going on in the media, but I don't know if you saw the movie Girls Trip. Have you seen the movie Girls Trip as of yet?
Well, I haven't had a chance to see it yet, but unfortunately, you know, I feel like I kind of have a gist of what it's about from just seeing the billboards and the commercials
and the trailers. No, and that's funny that you say that, because what we were discussing and what even got us on this topic was not just a movie coming out, but Dr. Boyce Watkins created this video where he said the movie made him very uncomfortable. And he said he had not seen the movie, but he saw the trailers and he heard the radio commercials. And he said it made him feel very uncomfortable. And one of the statements or the comments that they made in the movie was the lady said, "You can't get STDs in your booty hole." And so Dr. Boyce Watkins does this whole video in response to the movie Girls Trip. And one of the things that he was saying was kind of exactly what you were saying or what they were saying in the documentary, that AIDS in the African-American community is skyrocketing. You know,
yes,
and for
indeed.
Us to take that lightly and for us to take that as a joke, you know, everybody, so it's just entertainment, but we follow celebrities. So when you have these famous women, not the characters, but when you're looking at the Jada Pinkett Smith and the Queen Latifahs and the Regina Hall and Tiffany Haddish is definitely getting her 30 minutes of fame in the spotlight. But we follow these celebrities, so now they're making it, you know, okay for women who tended to be more religious now to say, you know what, I'm a forget all of that. And again, I'm paraphrasing for Dr. Boyce Watkins, but he's saying that now they're going to go out and do the things that they see in this movie and that this is what Hollywood is perpetrating. And so we came back on Monday's show as, you know, Hollywood or a part of Hollywood and just simply asked the question, is it our responsibility to, you know, teach responsible sexual behavior or not to put out these stereotypes? Or is it just our responsibility to make good television and make entertainment? So if you would just, any thoughts you have, I would love to hear them.
Okay, well, I completely agree with Dr. Boykins with that, for sure. I feel like the main reason why it's no longer entertainment is because, all right, so it's like, I think it's like a couple layers. So one thing that's important for everybody to understand, in my opinion, is that the traditions and the understanding of what we're supposed to be as a people has changed. So pretty much people don't recognize it, but, you know, because in the absence of, you know, of traditions of passing down stories of, you know, of people teaching their kids things that they learned in the home and not from a TV, that's out the window now. But the problem is the reason for those stories are still here, so that, you know, the reason for those, for tradition and all of that is so that people can continue to have guidance, you know, and especially with Black people, being so hurt and not really having a way to cope. And I don't mean hurt, like, you know, I mean, like, just being Black, no matter where you are, you can be a millionaire, it doesn't really matter. We all have that pain, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, now to fill that pain, unfortunately, is entertainment, but it's given to us as a vice, you know, as a way, you know, to enjoy ourselves. But in reality, we're taking something like that's a vice, something that's supposed to be enjoyable, and we're putting it in that place to try to heal whatever's going on, you know? So it's like, is it our responsibility? Yes, it's our responsibility 100%, but at the same time, we have to understand that warfare that's actually going on. We have to understand that it's not just entertainment. And it's hard to understand. It's really hard to understand that, you know, as time goes on and, you know, generations, you know, the new 40-year-old in 2017 is not the 40-year-old in, you know, in 65. You know what I'm saying? So it's like now all we have are these images that the media or Hollywood or whatever you want to call it was to put out there. And I think it's very interesting that they got actresses such as Queen Latifah and Jada Pinkett Smith, because it kind of goes along with that whole Jay-Z effect that happened when his album came out. It's a lot of positivity that people have been telling us years and years and years, you know what I'm saying? But until we found something like Jay-Z is entertainment or whatever that fills that hole, you know, once that person, now, you know, he put out that new album pretty much, you know, as a more grown-up album. He said more consciously aware things on this album. So now people are starting to want to open their eyes to, you know what I'm saying, to open their eyes to it. And it's like that can be very, very dangerous, because that's pretty much proven that, you know, we're relying on entertainment, you know, to pretty much show us the right way to do things, you know. But I feel like the movie, no problem, I feel like the movie is okay in the world where we understand. Hi, see? What's wrong? Oh, I'm about to, all right. You know, in a world where we can tell the difference, you know, the movie wouldn't be a problem. But unfortunately, we aren't there. So, like I was saying, you know, things our grandparents used to say, these things are out the window now. So now this entertainment has taken that spot. So that's really the problem. I don't even think the entertainment itself is the problem. It's the space that it's taken, you know, in the community. You know what I'm saying? Like what it's filling. You know what I'm saying? Because truth be told, you know, people have been telling us the right things, you know, for a very long time. But the main problem that I think we're having as a community is that we don't trust ourselves individually. Like if everybody trusted themselves, I feel like it would be a different outcome with ticket sales in the box office, you know. But like I said, what we're missing, that hole that we have, especially as you know, as darker people, which is we're going to the box office to fill that hole. And that's really the problem. You know, the entertainment itself, you know, that warfare is going to always be there. You know, if we, you know, and it's, that's why it's important, like with Dr. Boykins there, breaking that down, because we have to, it's something that we really have to understand, because it's not going to go nowhere. It's only going to get worse as it's already gotten worse. You know, next thing you know, I'm praying that it would never happen, but, you know, they're going to put somebody like Felicia Rashad in the super position. You know what I'm saying? So it's like that's always going to be there. And, you know, we can't really blame the artists, you know, for portraying certain roles and characters, because, you know, even, hey, everybody, even if you work, you know, as a security guard, you got to sign a contract. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like, you know, is it just entertainment? Yes. And no, I think it's just up to the people to understand that, you know, what we're actually doing with this entertainment and why it's so booming. It's booming because we are using this shit to fill a fucking, to fill an empty hole that we all have. And once we recognize that, maybe we can just stop trying to fill that hole with the wrong things. Because the things that are supposed to go in that hole, in my opinion, they're very, very uncomfortable things, because it's pretty much now you gotta, you know, you no longer like, it's like, you know how like, you go into a store, you know, or somebody, like, you know, you see somebody at a store, you know, and they're trying to rob the store, and they're just stuffing things in the bag. That's pretty much what we're doing with entertainment. We're just stuffing it. We're not even really paying attention. We're just getting what we think we want or what we think we need at the time to fulfill that adrenaline rush. But, you know, you know, well, usually, I mean, you're always going to get caught in some shape or form. If not that time, later on, you know, you're going to find yourself having to go in that bag and take that and take all that other stuff out. And that's what we really just have to do, just go in that bag, go in that hole, and just, you know, do all that uncomfortable stuff, just going through it, you know. But until, you know, we trust ourselves individually to do that, then, you know, we're always, it's this, you know, girls, it's going to be another girls talk movie to try to have the same conversation with. And I think it's important to do. I'm down to have it a million times. You know, they say you ain't going to change or do something different unless you hear it seven times or whatever. So, but yeah, that's really how I feel about it. I didn't mean to talk for so long.
No, you're fine. I'm over here sitting down taking notes on the questions I want to ask next. I can definitely tell you're passionate. I mean, that's what's going to make a difference in life and what's going to make a difference in the world is people's passion. You know what I mean? I love to see passionate people who can get up and make their voice heard, and that's what we do here in the Punch Bowl is we allow people to join the conversation, to ask their questions, make their comments. If you're listening to, on the line right now, if you have a question, if you have a comment, and want to join the conversation, please press 1. If you're listening to the show on your computer and you want to join the conversation about something you heard, something you have a question about, a comment, give us a call, 657-383-1974. 657-383-1974. We are speaking now with the poet, the one and only Partiality. So we hear you got to go. You got to run. So we're not going to hold
you. No, I'm good. You're good, though.
So tell us, do you have any performances or where can people find out more information on you?
Well, they can find out more at streetpoetsnyc.com. And Street Poets, spelled correctly, streetpoetsnyc.com. And they can pretty much, because the way I spell it, it's real crazy, so I wouldn't even try to, you know, spell it out. But yeah, that's how they can get more info.
Fantastic. Where are you going to be at? Where are you going to be performing? Where can they see
you? Well, right now, I don't have anything exactly lined up in LA. I'm working on a few things. Because, you know, usually my home base is out in Brooklyn. I've been out here for about a month now, setting up some things. I'm trying to, I am going to start an art show in LA. But that won't be until September. But I'll definitely, you know, update you guys with information. And it'll also be on the website, too.
Okay. And what we definitely want you to do is we want to invite you to join us on our social media network. This is the Punch TV Studios social media network, nabuki.com. And that's nabuki.com, nabuki.com, because we would love to hear more of your poetry, but also we love to join you on your journey. So as you get acclimated to Los Angeles, whatever you have going on, if you want to, you know, create a video of you doing your poetry and upload it to the website, I mean, we do so many different events where we're always looking for great people to come out, to host, to be a part of it. We never know, you know, what the future holds, but what we do know is that whenever we're looking for anything or anyone or any service, we start with Nabuki first. It's free.
Awesome.
Just go ahead, join, upload your photo. You can create your own group, create your own fan page, allow us to help you get acclimated to L.A., and let us do what we do. So don't go anywhere, Partiality. We have a few other people, a couple of people joining us in the Punch Bowl. They have a question or comment for today's show. Good morning, a bottle of youth. Are you with us?
Yes, we are. How you doing this morning? And good morning, this is New York.
Yeah. Good morning.
What's up? This is Brooklyn.
You're joining us in the Punch Bowl. What questions or comments do you have for us? Do you want to talk to Partiality?
Well, one question I would like, did she start her work on the platforms of the subway? I know a lot of artists and poets get started that.
I was curious. That same thing. Sorry. But that thought came to my mind.
Yes, I did, actually. I've been performing on the subway for years. Usually, I'm a poet. I'm dressed all in blue. I have locks, so I tuck them in my hoodie, and me and my partner, we're on the train. So that's definitely.
That's what's up. I grew up in New York, and I used to listen to a lot of the poets and performers on the platform, and I always knew that was a great place for folks to start. It was just hard to be acknowledged a lot of times, and here with Punch TV, I'm so glad someone from New York have, you know, actually found out about it. We went around the country trying to make sure everybody knew. So I was hoping tonight real hot, and everybody that was going to New York was telling everybody in New York about Punch TV. So I'm very, very glad to hear you here on the radio, and I thought your poem was wonderful.
I really appreciate that.
So what kicked you off as far as poetry? I mean, what was your fancy, your growing up in school, what made you lead to that direction?
I named myself Harsh Reality when I was 11 years old. I really don't know. I started writing poetry. I really just started writing, to be honest with you. I had a couple diaries, and I would just write in them. And then next thing I knew, you know, I wanted to write a poem. And my first poem was actually about Tweety Bird. And I just kept writing. And then I saw that I enjoyed it. And then I just started to just, you know, dig inside of, you know, inside of my thoughts or whatever. And I just started writing about that. And that's when I came about, you know, Harsh Reality. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I know my birth mother, she also wrote poetry. So I assume, you know, that's just something that just, you know, just, that was going to come out, and it just did. But yeah, it's something that I never had to go back and forth about hobbies or anything like that. So, and also another thing also too, that, you know, a lot of times, you know, when I was younger, you know, especially when you're in foster care and adoption and all that good stuff, you know, they try to do a lot of things to try to preoccupy your time. And I guess I just felt like poetry was really just something that was just mine. You know, it wasn't really something that was introduced to me. So I guess, you know, I felt like it was, you know, something that I created for myself. And yeah, I feel like that's, you know, I think that's really important, honestly, especially with kids in that circumstance, like now being able to find something for yourself. It's always good for people to introduce you to things. But, you know, when you find something that you feel like you connect with on your own, I guess it just makes it, you know, that much closer to you.
Right. I'm really glad you said that because, you know, growing up as a latchkey kid in the 70s and 80s in New York, you had a lot of time on your hands. And what folks don't realize who don't live in this is the children growing up, they really have nothing to do. Everything we come up with generally is because someone to get to it. But it goes unnoticed, and a lot of children in New York City are very, very talented, you know, when it comes to poetry, writing, you know, songwriting. You know, I grew up writing poetry as well. My mom did, and it did the same. But, you know, I had a young sister who I was helping raise when I was 9. She was 1. And so as a kid and helping my mother out, you know, so that she could go out there and take care of her job, and I would take care of home. Those are the things that we did. And as my sister grew up, we would write poetry back and forth. And sometimes it was just before just to make people laugh. And those are the things in the urban community that no one knows about. They don't know of the urban community and how they become so talented. And a lot of it is because parents have to work and they're home by themselves. So I'm very glad to have heard that.
That's a very interesting point. I mean, I was definitely thinking about the subway. I mean, because there's this, when you, my dad's from Brooklyn. My dad's from Bedford-Stuyvesant. So, and it's so funny, you know, we've been in California since 85, and my dad can work, I'm from New York, into every conversation to this day. Like, that, I don't know how he does it, but he works it into every conversation. Like, that's irrelevant. Trump is in office, but I'm in New York. So I'm from New York. So let me tell you, today is Friday, TGI is Friday, because you know in New York, I'm like, what is that? That's like a New York thing. But there's a certain vibe, a certain energy, and when you, that is not, you know, anywhere else. Like in L.A., we have the metro. You know, it's all nice, it's all clean, but it doesn't have that same, you know, New York vibe, that same energy. There aren't people, you know, on the metro singing songs and, you know. So I love the energy and I love the creativity, and I never really thought about how a lot of it is just having time on your hands.
Right.
But I also think it's about the arts, though. That's something that, you know, it is really, I was born in D.C., you know, and the East Coast has a different energy, you know, it's more creative, more artsy. You know, here, and I'll tell you what we do in California, in case you didn't know, since you're new here, we chill. That's what we do. Like, we take chilling to the art, you know, to like
that's
the
a
art
fact.
Form.
Yeah, right? I've noticed. Word. It's cool, though. Word. It's cool. Word.
Yeah, I was thinking about that week, but, you know, 6, 7 years old, my mother, you know, would take me to school for 1 or 2 weeks. And after that, I was on my own. I was taking the buses. I was taking the subway. It's just a different life. And what folks don't understand, that folks that come from New York City are a whole lot more mature than their age. And it's because of the way we were raised. And so I think a lot of times that's why you see New Yorkers have a lot of, they go get them attitude. They got a certain hustle about themselves. I mean, I think that's something that really should be brought out in Hollywood. And as far as Punch TV in a part of Hollywood, I would like to consider it the new Hollywood, because I really feel that's where it's going to go. I really honestly believe that Punch TV is going to take TV and Hollywood and movies to a whole nother level that hadn't been seen before because of the opportunity and the folks that they reach. You're going to come up with a whole lot of great ideas from the community, from shareholders. You, is your name Harshiality or Partiality?
Harsh Reality. Yeah, I said it wrong. I've been saying it wrong. I apologize for that. I've been saying it wrong the whole show.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Not a problem. But, you know, just like yourself, I mean, you have an experience that the world does not know. And the only way they're going to know it is either to listen to your poetry or for us to get you in a movie and tell about your life.
I hear that.
I think a lot of times,
when you're in L.A., you have to keep that New York hustle. And what it is, too, is, you know, on the East Coast, if you are homeless, you will literally die. Now, here in Southern California, where it's about 80 degrees at night, you go lay out on the beach, go get you a little bench, wake up in the morning, you'll be all right. You know what I mean? So
I hear that
not
word.
Definitely
not like that in New York.
Yeah, she wants you to take $1,000 and buy bus tickets for the homeless folks in New York, because she never understood why they chose New York to be homeless. She said, well, if you're going to be a bum, then be the best bum you can be in a nice, And I was trying to explain to her that it's just like any other person in New York. They don't want to leave New York. You know, you wouldn't understand that under the subway there's another subway. And that subway, there's folks living there. I used to go down 8, 9 years old tagging trains. You know, now, this is a long time after, so hopefully I won't have no warrants after me by now. But, you know.
Statute of limitations then ran out 30 years ago. We good.
I believe so. And not to mention they did, you know, change all the trains back to a normal color, which the last time I was up there, I didn't really appreciate that, because it did show the urban community. That's one thing the train showed York from the 70s, 80s, early 90s. It shows the urban community on the outside of those trains. And it seemed like they were trying to hide the urban community by whiting those trains back out. And so when B Street came out and everything back in the days, you know, I mean, that was really live for a 10 or 12-year-old on the street, because it gave them something to identify by. And that has been lost.
Yes, indeed. Word. That's a fact. But I feel like, you know, I'm glad you said that, because you said, you know, seeing the graffiti on the train, you said it gave the youth something to identify with. And I think that's really important, because, say, you know, of course, you know, now the younger generation now, people like that's not in their 20s yet, you know, I'm sure it's a lot harder for them now. But overall, a lot of times, and even I've also noticed with the whole, you know, people doing the community outreach and all that for the kids or whatever, and it's like people don't realize that it's not that, you know, that the kids aren't interested, you know, because sometimes, you know, I'll do poetry at schools, and it's not that the kids aren't interested, it's just that they really just want something that they can honestly relate to, because kids can pick fake and phony out before adults can, you know. And, you know, it's sometimes very obvious, you know, to everybody, but especially probably, you know, more so a child's mind, it's very obvious when you're trying to take them out of their element. And especially when they don't even really understand what that element is entirely, you know. So it's like, that's why I feel like it's less important, you know, to try to get kids to do things like karate and all that. So that stuff is cool, but I feel like it's less important for to try to push them in that direction. And it's more important to just try to, like, they say, you know, you can, you know, you got two ears and one mouth for a reason. I think it's more important to really just listen to them, you know, because, you know, someone told me, like, everything that you have, you know, all the talents that you have, you pretty much have with you when you get here. So they got it in them just the same way. It's just that, you know, they just, it's really hard, you know, for even, you know, for them to bring it out on their own. And it's also really hard to do it, you know, when things may not be stable for them, or just like in New York right now, when you see your whole community changing right before your eyes, before you can really understand what, you know, why it even had to happen, you know? So that's really significant. Like, just like, so after you said that, it made me think about that, you know, changing, taking the graffiti down to try to give kids a better chance at life, quote unquote. But, you know, sometimes it's like, you know, a palm tree can grow beautiful in LA because that's what it's supposed to do. You know, a palm tree, you know, may not, you know, sustain life, you know, in New York City the same way it would here. And that's not even saying that one is better than the other. It's just saying that, you know, maybe you're supposed to grow in the dirt that you came out of. You know what I'm saying? And also not just dirt. It's just that, you know, everything is, you know, is what's the word? Subjective. Everything is subjective, you know? So it's like, you know, what might be dirt to one person is dirt to the other one. And, you know, you really can't compare struggles, but it's hard to do that in the world, you know, in America today, you know, where it's like, you know, it's this bar that everybody has to live up to. And if you're not at that bar, everybody just wants to get you there, even if that's not, maybe not even where you're supposed to be, you know? So it's like, that's why you have a lot of people who, you know, who are making money, who not making money, whatever the case may be, chasing the money, who, you know, are still messed up inside because they're really not going within, or they just haven't had the chance to go within, you know, or are scared to go within because what they're going to pull out isn't going to be a $1 million idea, you know? So it's like, you know, I think that's really the thing, you know, especially, actually I was working with this school in LA, working with their kids, this little after school program, twice a week. And they were able to sign up for whatever they wanted to do. Is they had poetry, they had dance, and they had something else. And, you know, and having them be able to pick what they want to do was cool. And then some of the kids who signed up for the poetry class, when they're in the class, you know, some of them didn't even really want to, you know, first they didn't want to be there, but, you know, I made it, I guess, you know, comfortable for them so they can just do their thing or whatever. But it just shows you more of how, you know, sometimes trying to point people in a certain direction, it's just not, you know, it's just not ideal, you know? Just like trying to take a chance from having graffiti all over them to trying to be something that it's not, you know? But, I mean, hey, you know, we all know how everything has to change, so.
I totally understand what you're saying. Like I said, you know, the graffiti and everything, all that old stories, you know, and it kind of, this really perfectly segues into what I was talking to Sharif about as far as Punch maybe having like a urban investigative crime unit, you know, because mm-hmm. the same thing in the urban communities with all the different crimes, a lot of times those folks got nobody to go to but the police department. And we need a policeman that polices the police. I'm not saying that we go in there, we're taking over the investigation, but we can observe, we can make sure that everything goes right. So those folks that do have the perfect opportunity to move on in life. And, you know, the police department, what I learned also with working police departments, not all police officers are good police officers. Now, I'm not going to take nothing from the great ones because there's a bunch of great police officers, but you got a certain section of police officers who don't want to see young men get ahead. We were at Virginia Beach yesterday, and I was watching one officer pull over these two young kids on a motorcycle. And you could tell he only gave him a ticket to mess their life up because other than that, he couldn't let them go. There's police discretion. Police officer discretion. And that's one of the lost arts of law enforcement.
Absolutely, absolutely. But I think we have so many different topics, you know, on hand. And I love when you spoke, Harsh Reality, about the art and forcing children to pick a certain, you know, outlet. Mm-hmm. You know, I think one of the greatest disappointments that I've seen in my lifetime is taking the arts out of the schools. I mean, like, literally that broke my heart, because you now have kids that are just taught that all you need is music, I'm sorry, math and reading. Math and that's all you need, get you a job, you know, but it's the art.
They need math, the internet, and then maybe one other course, and they're all right. That's the way they're being taught nowadays, you know.
Exactly.
And that's the most absurd idea. I mean, we had home economics growing up.
Yes.
Where
yes.
we did cooking one part of the school year, and we did sewing or shop or whatever the second part of the school year. I mean, I'm the cook in my house because of that. Mm-hmm. I know how to sew while driving. There's a lot of things that I know how to do that most people will look at me coming from New York and wouldn't even think of. But I can tell you one thing. Most people that grew up in New York know how to cook.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
And you
but the, all of those things are gone. All of those things are gone. You
but
know?
You also,
so
you got to notice. Uh-huh.
No, I'm just saying all of those things are gone now.
Yeah, that's where it goes. Yeah, when I was living out in Alameda, because I was stationed on USS Abraham Lincoln, which was out of Alameda, California. And I spent a lot of time in Southern California as well as Northern California, you know, San Francisco, mm-hmm. Oakland. They're different. Their mm-hmm. children, they're different. They don't have the same focus, and that's one of the things that I wish the United States would make sure that across the board, everybody had the same focus when it came to school. Especially in the earlier generations of school, you know, because that's where everybody is ready to learn. When you get to high school, you want to learn, but you got some other things going on. You know, you got a social life going on. You might have that girlfriend or that boyfriend, you know, that's keeping you from really hitting the books like we used to back in the 70s before we had internet.
Right, absolutely. But those classes are usually what kept us from the, you know, all the boys and all the girls. It's like, no, we got swim meet tonight. I got gymnastics tonight. I got to go, you know, I'm in the school play tonight. So, I, you know, it's so many things that, you know, like you discussed, keep it busy. If we have it, and like you talked about your poetry, when you were in the different homes and the different situations, that's what you had to hold on to. So these things mm-hmm. that all these children have to hold on to are the one thing that's been ripped from them. So that's why, you know, yes. I love what I do. I love to come to work every day. It's one of those things, if you they say if you love what you do, you'll never work a
keep
day in your life.
It.
And
that's
I think even about of you, if you mentioned that on one of the shows this week, that you love what you do, and you and your family are just so adorable. I'm still waiting on my picture of the dog, by the way. I threw that in there.
Oh,
but
we have it, and we have a video.
It's the love and the passion, because I love the working with creative people, you know. And I always tell people, I've been, you know, with the company for 4 years, and the one thing that made me fall in love with it, my background is business. I my gift from God, you talk about talent, God gave each one of us at least one talent, and that talent is for you to earn a living. That's why you have that talent. So you, on this earth, you have to be able to provide, and you have to be able to survive. So you have at least one talent. I know my talent. My talent is a gift of manifestation. I can make money. That's what I do. I may not be able to do all the creative stuff, but I can take any idea and I can turn it into a viable business. So I love what I'm doing now, because the difference between this business and any other business is that in Hollywood, there's literally no rules. You can do anything. You can be anything. You can create anything. You can take a person off the street and make them into a celebrity. It's just wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
That is a fact. And I thought it was interesting earlier when y'all were saying how you know at one point it was a lot of art available in school, and how right now, you know, they're pretty much trying to work, take it out. And I was just noticing, like, all the connections. Like, now if you have, you know, and it makes sense. At one point, when you have all of these things available for people to do it, for kids to do in school, like, you know, in the 70s or the 80s or whatever, and you got things to do to keep you occupied. Of course, you know, you're gonna grow up, you know, with a little bit more common sense. But I've even noticed, you know, when you look at, when you think about, like, you know, just the history of black people in America, the history of America, the history of the world, as far as people conquering here, conquering there. It's like everything has progressively gotten worse, you know, and pretty much it's like it's gotten worse to the point where it's like we are more so heavily reliant on technology and entertainment versus everything else. And that's possible because that art that was available in the classrooms back in the day, you know, that was a part of the healing process. You know what I'm saying? So now instead of having art in schools or whatever, where you can learn or whatever, and you can find your own voice, you know, if you don't have that chance anymore, you know, of course you're going to go to whatever is available, and they made it readily available for you to take entertainment in that place. You know what I'm saying? And then now, of course, having entertainment in that place, you know, it's not, you know, a lot of my friends, you know, we want to do the whole hip hop, whatever lifestyle, cool. So now you're taking that, and that just leads you right into be those two young men that you were talking about on the freeway getting pulled over because they look like a rap video. You know what I'm saying? Because instead of being able to find your own light, or you can't do now because you don't have art readily available in schools, and you know, and your parents are relying so heavily on just math and reading that, you know, you go straight to girls talk. You know what I'm saying? And it just shows you this is like a vicious cycle. And that's why I think it's important for us to like really support, because it's pretty much just picking one mindset over the other. It's less for me. It's less about, you know, oh, support black business because, you know, we got to get this money. But only, and I say that only because right now, the people that got the purchasing power are the poor people or the black poor people. So it really can't be that much about money. It's got to be about mindset, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You said a mouthful right there. We definitely understand what you're saying and what you're coming from. But, you know, from one of those older 40-ish people, I will say this, is that the one thing that is true and will always be true is that it's always darkest before the dawn. So there are more people who are waking up and taking a look at where we are and saying, it's getting a little bit worse. What is it that we can do to make it better? Because one of the things that I always say to my team, and it drives them crazy, but I always tell them, don't bring me a problem without a solution. Don't bring me a problem without a solution. So what are the things that we can do to take a look at some of the changes that have already been made? And so technology has our children sitting in front of the television staring at their smart phones, but technology also allows us to be more aware of what's going on in the world. I'm one of those people who definitely believes that it's not that more police brutality is going on, it's just that more police brutality is being filmed. So more people are aware of the things that are going on, and with knowledge comes responsibility. So it's our responsibility for people who see it, for people who are aware of it, and who know what's going on, to say, what can we do to make this world a better place?
I completely agree. Mm-hmm.
That was me on my soapbox.
I think that's put up on the bookie as far as ideas of shareholders and other followers on the bookie on how we could make life better for the children that are in school today, you know, within the next year. You know, I have a 1-year plan of something that we could do through Punch TV. I mean, we have TV, so we can offer education, you know, or even ideas. But one of the main things I would really love for the school system to really change is to make, you know, school 50% of the arts, I mean, all the arts, and, you know, at least 25% business and the other 25% hustle, because these kids have no hustle. They don't understand what hustle is. If they wasn't raised with a male in their life who had that hustle, it was hard to see from mom, because mom was generally at work, you know, like my mom was. So I knew my mom was a hustler growing up in New York. I mean, that was one of the things I loved about my mom, that, and she was a whole lot shorter than me, so most people thought she was my sister instead of my mom, you know. But, I mean, she had a hustle, it taught me something. It taught me never to give up. You know, always have a why. You
got
New York, you know? I mean, it's just one of them things. You know, growing up in New York City is different. It is so, so different. I spent time in the club. I used to watch these jokers with all their makeup and everything while I'm putting my little 5 cents in a little jukebox sitting on the table while they're out there dancing.
Yeah.
Because when I went out, I mean, what was she going to do, leave me home? No, she took me with her. Those clubs back then.
No, I definitely agree. My dad.
Put them in the corner, you know. But I learned a lot from watching these adults at such a young age and how they went about life to take care of their family.
Mm-hmm.
That is just not no more.
Yes,
you know?
My dad's the exact same way.
But I feel like the reason, it's like from the bottom of my heart, and I completely understand, well, at least from what I've, I'm observing, it's like I think the reason why it's not taught anymore, you know, is because it's like I think it's just because y'all parents, you know, it's like they wanted all of us, for y'all and for me, like they wanted us to not work as hard. You know what I'm saying? I think that's the reason why, but I just feel like they didn't realize that, you know, I know you feel like, you know, we've been through a lot as a people. I understand that. And I know, you know, you don't want me to work as hard, but they forgot that work or whatever, or, you know, that annoying thing that their parents used to make them do is the reason why they aren't in the predicament that some of their kids are in.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
And it's like, and it's that fear. I think it's just that fear of, and also, and it makes sense in a way because it's like if somebody teaches you, perfect example, right? If somebody teaches you how to hustle because like your life is dependent on it, you know what I'm saying? When it's time for you to teach your children that same thing, you want it to be easier on them because, and also you just want it to be easier for them because, you know, you don't want them to go through that, and also because you're just so scarred from the reasons why you had to hustle. So pretty much you just want to give them the fruits of your labor. You know, it makes a lot of sense, but it's like at the same time,
I totally understand exactly what you're saying. You know, we raised seven children and a little bit more, but we also made them do like my mom did. You know, I really took a lot of stuff that my mom did growing up as a child. Important is to be important when I got older, like 10 words a day from the dictionary, you know, the vocabulary, the dictionary words, putting them in a sentence. I mean, my mom gave me a spelling test every night before I went to sleep, and if I didn't pass the whole thing, I had to stay up until I passed the whole thing. That's just the way it was. I mean, she didn't have a lot of time to spend with me, you know. I mean, she was working. I started working at 4 years old at Canarsie Aquarium right there on Rockaway Parkway. And, but that was a job I went out to seek. You know, it was a hustle.
Mm-hmm.
My mother had a hustle. She had to shoot pool, you know, so that I can make money shooting pool. I mean, when I did not go to school all the time, I would shoot pool to make some money so I could take care of my mom and my sister, you know.
We have so much. This is definitely a wonderful conversation. I think we're going to continue this conversation on our show on Monday. Monday's topic, I think, is going to be kids today. That's what I'm calling it. We're going to discuss kids today and how we got here on Monday's episode of Changing the Conversation. So we definitely want to thank Harsh Reality for joining us today on Changing the Conversation. Please join us on Nabukie, NABUKIE.com. We want to thank A Bottle of You and A Bottle of You for Me for joining us in the Punch Bowl today. It's been an amazing week, an amazing show. Tune in on Monday, 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time in the Punch Bowl, where we're discussing kids today.
Thank you for listening to Changing the Conversation with Punch TV Studios CEO Joseph Collins. Tune in Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time as we continue to change the conversation in contemporary media. To be a guest or to share your thoughts on changing the conversation, visit Nabukie.com today. Don't miss out on the opportunity to be a part of the company that's revolutionizing media. Visit PunchTVStudios.com to become a part owner at $1 per share.